Today's episode of the Accidental Creative Podcast is brought to you by FreshBooks. Join the 24 million people who have used FreshBooks. Try it free for 30 days with no catch and no credit card required. Just go to freshbooks.com/accidental to get started. Hey everyone, welcome to the Accidental Creative Podcast. My name is Todd Henry. I am your host. So two words that often don't mix well are work and emotions. You know, we tend to put our emotions in a vault when we show up at work every day, in large part because I think that many of us think that exhibiting emotion in any form or fashion is going to make us sort of come across as maybe unreliable, maybe a little bit explosive, maybe a little bit dramatic. But the reality is that emotions at work can be not only beneficial to our collaborative efforts, but actually can help us better understand others and what others need from us when we have an environment that encourages us to not only show, but to embrace emotion at work. Well, today's guest is going to help us understand how to do that. It's Liz Fosling. She's the co-author of a new book called No Hard Feelings, The Secret Power of Embracing Emotions at Work. We're going to talk about a lot of things that will help you better leverage emotions and also understand the emotions of others in a work context. Before we jump in, I want to let you know today's episode is brought to you by FreshBooks. So I know we have a lot of small business owners that listen to the show, people who have started their own company. Do you remember when you started that small business? I'm sure you do. It was probably a season of extreme excitement, also a season of extreme stress. Maybe you were doing your business as a side hustle when you first began. It's no small feat. No matter how you launch a business, it is a season of turmoil. And it took a lot of late nights, early mornings, and occasional all-nighters. And the bottom line is you've probably been insanely busy ever since. So why not make things a little easier? Our friends at FreshBooks have the solution. FreshBooks invoicing and accounting software is designed specifically for small business owners. It's simple, it's intuitive, and it keeps you way more organized than a dusty shoebox filled with crumpled receipts. Create and send professional-looking invoices in about 30 seconds, and you can get them paid 2 times faster with automated online payments. You can file your expenses even quicker and keep them perfectly organized for tax time. And the best part? FreshBooks grows right alongside your business. You'll always have the tools necessary when you need them without ever having to learn the ins and outs of accounting. Join the 24 million people who have used FreshBooks, including us at Accidental Creative. We love FreshBooks. Try it free for 30 days. No catch and no credit card required. All you have to do is go to freshbooks.com/accidental and enter Accidental Creative in the How Did You Hear About Us section to get started. That's freshbooks.com/accidental and enter Accidental Creative in the How Did You Hear About Us section. We thank FreshBooks for sponsoring this episode of the Accidental Creative Podcast. Well, today's guest is Liz Fosling. She is the co-author of a new book called No Hard Feelings, The Secret Power of Embracing Emotions at Work. Liz, welcome to the Accidental Creative Podcast.
Thank you. Thanks for having me. Excited to be here.
Well, so this topic, emotions at work, right? This is something that, I mean, we kind of sweep under the rug. We don't really talk much about emotion. And when we do talk about it, we often talk about it as an impediment, right? It's like, oh, you're getting too emotional. You have to remove the emotion from what you do. Why is it so hard for us to discuss emotion with regard to work?
Yeah, I mean, I think we're coming out of this long tradition of what you just described, where people think that you need to check all your feelings at the door when you enter an office in order to be rational. Mm. And the truth is that that's biologically impossible. We're emotional creatures completely regardless of circumstance. And so if we don't take the time to acknowledge that we're feeling emotions, we're also unable to see the actually really useful signals contained within those emotions. And so my favorite example of this is envy. Envy is stigmatized, and I'm not endorsing that if you're jealous or envious of someone, you should let that affect your behavior towards them. But if you take the time to hold that envy up to the light and examine it, it might reveal what you value. And so, for example, we interviewed Gretchen Rubin, who wrote The Happiness Project and The Four Tendencies, and she said when she was considering a career change, she read stories of alumni in her school's magazine. And at the time, she was a lawyer. And when she read about alums who had amazing law careers, she thought it was interesting. But when she read about alums who had amazing writing careers, she said she felt like sick with envy. And so for her, that was just a really strong signal of, oh, maybe I should pursue becoming a writer because it's obviously something that I covet and wish I had for myself.
You know, we don't think about our sort of that internal compass of emotion as being something that can, like you said, be used to our advantage. And we often think of it as an impediment. It's something that's getting in the way of our ambitions rather than as that kind of a compass. And so I would love to talk about some of the ways that emotions can be advantageous to us at work. I mean, being in touch with our emotions, not just being emotional, right? I mean, it's not what we're talking about here. What we're talking about is paying attention to the emotions that we feel and the signals that they're sending to us. So one of the chapters of the book discusses the importance of emotions with regard to decision making, which is funny because we often think about, we often think of decision making as just a purely rational process, right? But why are emotions so valuable to us in decision making?
Yeah, so two big reasons. The first is that if you don't acknowledge that you have emotions at the point of making the decision, the emotions that are just noise and are not relevant to the decision, you won't acknowledge them, and so they'll stick their tentacles into your decision-making process. Mm-hmm. So an example of this is, let's say I'm sitting in traffic for 2 hours because there's a bad accident, when I get into work, I'm going to be irritated. And if I don't take the time to flag, like, I'm irritated and it's because of traffic, it's not because of my colleagues or because of the project I'm working on, I might spend the whole day attributing my irritation to my colleague or to something that it has nothing to do with. And if I'm making a decision, research shows if I'm angry or upset, I'm going to make rasher decisions, I'm going to rely more on stereotypes. So it's really important to stop and say, what am I feeling? And should I pay attention to this, or should I try hard to kind of set it aside because it's coming from somewhere else? And then there are some emotions that are very useful. So if you're choosing between two options and the thought of not picking one option fills you with regret, that's a very important signal that you should listen to, because your brain is doing some kind of calculation around, oh, this seems appealing for whatever reason. And again, it's not that if you feel regret, that's automatically telling you what the right choice is. It's just another data point that you should factor into your decision-making calculation.
Yeah, I mean, there are all kinds of things that we regret that were probably still the right decision, right, in the long run.
Right.
You know, like I regret not having that extra piece of, cheesecake at dinner or something. Okay, yeah, okay, but still, it's the right decision. But, you know, to your point, if we pay attention to those hunches, those little, like you said, calculations that are happening deep within us somewhere, they can be great and really valuable clues. And I love the point about paying attention to why you're irritated, because I do think we misattribute, don't we? We often misattribute our emotions to our present circumstances rather than maybe something else that's completely irrelevant that happened to us 3 hours ago.
Yeah, it's so important. And it's also, it allows you to avoid just unintended anxiety and unintended strife among your colleagues. So one thing that we really encourage people to do as well is, if you, again, in the traffic example, you come into the office, people are going to notice that you're upset, even if you're trying not to let it affect your behavior. So if you've ever sat next to someone who's very stressed out about something, you can feel that, you can sense it, even if they don't say anything to you. And so if you, especially as a manager, don't just say, hey, I'm having a bad morning, want to let you know it has nothing to do with you, and I just maybe need a half an hour and I'll be fine. If you don't acknowledge that, people are going to immediately start to think, like, what did I do to upset this person? And that then they're going to interact with you through this lens of, like, you're upset with me, so I'm on guard, and then you're going to start sensing that, and it just devolves. And all it takes to stop that spiral is just, again, having a bad day. You don't have to go into detail. Oh, sorry.
You don't have to go worries.
I'll start over. So all it takes to stop that spiral is just, again, flagging. You don't have to go into details, but just acknowledging that your day isn't going that well. You're working on it, but it's not their fault, and they should not let it, you know, fester in their mind as an issue.
Yeah, one of the things that I often tell leaders is ancient leaders make anxious leaders. Yeah, ancient leaders make ancient teams. Anxious leaders make anxious teams. And if you walk in and you are not in touch with that anxiety, you're going to drive your team crazy. And they're always going to be hopping left and right, trying to figure out, you know, what you're going to be worried about next and trying to get ahead of your worries. And so let's talk a little bit about how emotions affect the culture of the team. This is another fascinating chapter in the book. How do our emotions affect the team's culture?
Yeah, so emotions are so important because, or have such a dramatic impact on culture because we pick up on others' emotions, and it's a process psychologists call emotional contagion. So again, if you've ever sat next to someone who's really anxious, or you describe the manager who comes in and is anxious, everyone suddenly starts to feel like that too. Mm-hmm. And that's because we catch each other's feelings. And it's not just in person, this can also happen digitally. So say you've ever been texting with someone and you get into an argument and suddenly they're just texting, sure, period, K, period. You can tell that they're upset, and then you will start to pick up on that and feel upset yourself. So it's really important, two things. One is to kind of create what we call an emotional flak jacket, which is just to be aware of how other people's emotions are impacting you and maybe either gently bring it up with them later, or just make sure that you're always monitoring and saying, okay, I need to not let this anxiety bother me that much. You can imagine yourself in a different place. Often physical distance can help you kind of step back and not be as susceptible to the emotional contagion. And if you're in a meeting, one thing that we love to tell people is at the beginning of meetings, you can have everyone quickly rate their mood on a scale of 0 to 10. And if someone rates their mood below 3, which is like very stressed, you can just ask them and say, is there anything right now that you could do to improve your mood? And often you'll find that someone says, yes, like I have this email that I need to send out and I'm really stressed about it, but we have this meeting, but I just can't stop thinking about this email. And in that case, it's better to have that person step out of the meeting and go and answer the email and then come back and be gone for maybe 15 minutes, as opposed to have them like, you know, jiggling their leg, tapping the table, and clearly being not present in the meeting, and then start to affect every single person around them. So it's really about being mindful both of how you are impacting others, but then trying to see what can we do to get people less stressed so that they don't start to infect everyone around them.
I love that. Yeah. All right, let's talk about leadership, because I know a lot of people listening are responsible for leading teams, or, I mean, frankly, even leading clients, right? I mean, yeah. I know that being in touch with your emotions is really important when you go into when a client pitch, or when a client is really pressing you hard and you have a difficult meeting, a difficult conversation with a client. And so one of the concepts you talk about in the book is selective vulnerability. What does this mean, and how is it valuable to us?
Yeah, so selective vulnerability is this idea that
no problem.
Selective vulnerability is this idea that, especially as a leader, you do need to show some form of emotion, otherwise people won't trust you. So research shows that we respond more positively to empathetic bosses, we're willing to go the extra mile for them, we're less likely to try and find a different manager. And that makes sense, right? So let's say that there's a round of layoffs, or everyone's just been working extremely long hours on a project. And if, as a leader, you just have absolutely no emotional expression or indication that you're also feeling the stress of that, people aren't going to trust you, because you definitely are feeling the stress of it. Right. And so you do want to admit that you're feeling some emotion, but then you also don't want to be having like a nervous breakdown in front of your employees. Otherwise, you'll undermine yourself and they won't trust you anymore to get the job done. So selective vulnerability is admitting that you are feeling something, but then always providing the most optimistic and realistic picture and providing a path forward. So an example of that is saying, again, in the scenario where everyone's been working long hours to meet a deadline, you can say, hey, I know we're all stressed. It's affecting me too. But I have full confidence that we're going to meet this deadline. The work we're doing is great. Here's how I'm working to ensure that. Here's what I need from you to ensure that. And that really does a nice job of letting them know everyone's affected. You're not the only one feeling like this, but still providing the security and stability that your employees need.
I love that. That's great. So what, I mean, we've been talking about the importance of being connected to your emotions and, you know, like you said, being selectively vulnerable and things of that nature, but how do we begin to identify those emotions or what we are feeling? And to some people it might sound like the most obvious question in the world, but it's really not, right? How do we begin to identify those emotions so that we can bring them to bear in our work?
Yeah, I mean, I would advise something that can be very useful is if you feel yourself having a strong emotional reaction, to just sit down and write out everything you're feeling. There's also, we have this in the book, but there's, if you Google, there's guides, you can just Google like emotion words wheel. And then instead of writing angry, there's like six options of what you might be feeling that's a little more detailed than angry. And that'll let you pinpoint exactly what you're feeling, which allows you to pinpoint the need driving that emotion. So a great example of this is, I recently was leading a design project and I found myself a few days ahead of the deadline getting extremely irritated with everyone. And so I took a moment to walk around the block and really think through, I like my colleagues, no one's doing anything that's annoying, why am I just reacting so strongly? And I realized that the irritation was a byproduct of me being extremely anxious about meeting the deadline. Mm-hmm. And so the need driving that anxiety was that I felt like we had taken on too much and we probably needed to cut a few things to make sure we met the deadline with work that was at a high, you know, performance bar. And so I was able then to go back to the team and we figured out, you know, we needed to adjust a few things, but then we all felt good about it and I suddenly was no longer irritated with anyone. So it's just so important to be able to say, here's what I'm feeling, here's what's driving that feeling, and then you can start addressing the underlying need.
I love that. You know, one of the things, one of the traps I fall into is I think that there are good and bad emotions, right? I think sometimes I think, oh, if I could just get rid of this emotion, then everything would be smoother in my life. And there really isn't such a thing as a good and a bad emotion, right? Emotions are just emotions. It's how you feel. It's how you react. And so, you know, instead of questioning why something is wrong with you, just acknowledging it, like you said, and identifying it and then being able to figure out, okay, well, how do I move beyond this, can be so, so unbelievably valuable. Are there any other practices or any other rhythms that you have incorporated into your life or you've taught others to incorporate in their life to help them do that?
I think the first is what you just mentioned, which is just don't feel bad about feeling bad. It's very normal to have off days, and sometimes there might not be a need driving that. You're just a little blue. And so research shows that the people who are able to most quickly move beyond that and then kind of return to a more content state are those that don't ruminate in that feeling. And like you said, they don't become anxious about being anxious, or they don't say, like, I should never feel bad. I think another big misconception, and I absolutely held this when I was younger, is that once you get to a happy point in your life, you're just going to be happy forever, right? Yeah. It's like the happily ever after. And that doesn't exist. Even in periods of your life when you're content, you're still going to have arguments with people. You're still going to get frustrated. And that's fine. That's part of existence. So the biggest thing we advise is just don't feel bad about feeling bad. Give yourself permission to feel. Again, we're not encouraging, like, don't, like, flip out at people around you, but just be kind to yourself. And then this is maybe a little tangential, but I've just found it so useful. I think a really important sort of quote unquote bad feeling to pay attention to, especially in the workplace, is fear. And I've started using this to figure out my priorities for the day. So I have a running list of to-dos, and I used to just kind of start crossing off whatever felt easy to get done. And I realized that was like organizing my desk or sending out a letter. And those are not the big things that you need to tackle to move your work forward in a meaningful way. And so now what I do is I look through this list in the morning, and the items that I feel most afraid of doing or seem hardest are the ones that I do first. Because it's usually the fear is a sign that this is very important and that the stakes are high. And so it's often like sending out an email to someone that I really admire, or pointing out a problem in a project that's happening. These are scary things because they're so important. And so I think, again, not beating yourself up about having these things and not just immediately throwing those hard feelings into the trash, but seeing where they're coming from can turn them into, I don't say that they're like, it's not suddenly a cakewalk to feel fear or to feel sad, but you're able to harness it in a useful way.
Oh, that's great. We've been talking to Liz Fosling. She's the co-author of No Hard Feelings, The Secret Power of Embracing Emotion at Work. Liz, if people want to find you, where can they find you?
They can find me at lizandmolly.com, which is the website for the book, and we have some really practical guides. Molly is M-O-L-L-I-E, and they can pre-order the book or order it on Amazon, Barnes & Noble, local bookstores, anywhere books are sold.
Fantastic. Well, Liz, thanks so much for taking the time to be with us today.
Thanks so much for having me. This was great.
And as always, thank you for listening. If you like this episode, make sure you subscribe wherever you listen to podcasts or join the conversation at collective.accidentalcreative.com. Remember, friends, cover bands don't change the world. Don't be a cover band. You need to find your unique voice if you want to thrive. We'll see you next time.